Behind the Line Extra for your Saturday, February 8th, 2020. I am your host, KC. You can follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Make sure to click the notification bell to receive all notifications from the channel. Leave a 5-star rating on iTunes. I appreciate all your support. It goes a long way in helping out the podcast. Mardi Gras officially began last night for those of us down here living on the Gulf Coast. One of my favorite times of year. It's also the last official event down here in the South before the weather begins to become unbearable. I find it funny when people from the Northeast or the Midwest complain about their frigid winters. Come spend a summer down South. You'll be begging for 25, 30 degree weather. The problem with living down here, for 4 to 5 months, you get zero relief from the heat and humidity. It's hot during the day. It's hot and humid at night. You walk outside 7, 8 o'clock at night. Within 5 minutes, you're sweating your ass off. It's just miserable. You can't play golf. Anything to do outside that doesn't involve water, you just can't do it. Bright side, though, of living down here is that once fall arrives, the weather is great for 7 or 8 months. Perfect golfing weather. Like I said, it's real hard to play golf down here when it's 95 degrees outside, 100% humidity. Anyway, I got off on a little bit of a tangent there. Let's get to the NBA. The NBA trade deadline is come and gone. Let's go over a couple of deals from Thursday. Already mentioned both the Lakers and Rockets on yesterday's podcast. Going to talk about both a little bit more. I feel like both of these organizations lost at the trade deadline, especially the Lakers. I don't know what the hell Rob Pelinka was thinking. Obviously, the biggest winner at the trade deadline was the LA Clippers. I already felt like they were the best team in the Western Conference coming into the season. Definitely the best team in Los Angeles. They've already beaten the Lakers twice. LeBron and the Lakers needed Marcus Morris more than the Clippers. Morris is a gritty player. A tough, shit-talking guy. The Clippers already have a guy like that in Patrick Beverley. The Lakers don't. That's what they're missing, a gritty player. They don't have a guy in a playoff series that is going to get in the ear of your best player. Get him off his game. Play dirty. Now, the Clippers have two of them. Remember what Patrick Beverley did to Kevin Durant last year in their first-round playoff series? He had KD off his game for a couple of games in that series. Now, talent always prevails in the playoffs, and the Clippers didn't have enough of it last year to beat a team like Golden State. But you add that dynamic in Marcus Morris to a team that's already loaded, already has two superstar players. Who the fuck in the Western Conference is going to beat the Clippers? One of the biggest criticisms I've always had of Anthony Davis is that he's soft. And now he's going to be matched up against one of the grittiest, toughest players in the league, Marcus Morris, for 7 games. The Lakers desperately needed Morris defensively. LeBron is still passable on defense, but not near the defender he was in his prime. Anthony Davis is great defensively. But he's fragile. He's always hurt. Always got a nagging injury. Other than that, the Lakers tend to struggle on the defensive side of the ball. Anthony Davis has missed 7 games this season. 2 of those were against the hapless Warriors and the Cavs. So I'm not going to count those 2 games. The other 5 games were against playoff teams. Lakers on the season give up about 107 points a game. Without AD in the lineup, they give up 113. The bottom line, and I've said this a couple of times, the Lakers needed Marcus Morris more than the Clippers did. And Rob Pelinka failed to make a deal happen because he wanted to hang on to Kyle fucking Kuzma, who doesn't really fit well on the floor with LeBron and AD anyway. On the one hand, I kind of understand Pelinka's thinking. He knows he only has a couple more years max with LeBron. He's thinking of the future because once LeBron leaves a franchise, they immediately head to the doldrums. Look what happened each time he left Cleveland. They went from the top to the bottom of the league. Same with Miami. It's taken the Heat 7-8 years to get back to being a real playoff contender after LeBron James left. So I understand why Rob Pelinka wanted to hang on to Kyle Kuzma. But like I said yesterday, you don't go and trade Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and Josh Hart, the future of your franchise, go out and get LeBron and Anthony Davis to win 2 or 3 years from now. You made those moves to win today, 2020, not tomorrow. So playing hardball with the Knicks, taking Kyle Kuzma off the table in the Marcus Morris deal, just cost you a championship this season, or the chance at one. Great job, Rob Pelinka. I think the Lakers passing on this deal pretty much guarantees Anthony Davis won't be back in Los Angeles next year. He'll be a free agent this summer in a weak free agent market. He'll be the biggest name free agent on the market. The Lakers already struggle to attract superstar players because they don't want to play in the shadow of LeBron. Guys like Kawhi Leonard don't want to play alongside LeBron James. That's why they couldn't get him in free agency last year. He went to the Clippers. Same with Paul George. So it didn't make any sense to me when you're contending for a championship this season that you wanted to hang on to a guy like Kyle Kuzma, take him off the table in the Marcus Morris deal, a guy that could make your team take that step to the next level. It just didn't make any sense. If Jerry West was still the general manager of the Lakers, he would have made that deal in a heartbeat. All right, let's get to the Rockets. I talked yesterday about the Rockets trading Clint Capela to the Hawks, how they're committing themselves to a small ball lineup. And I see a lot of people praising Daryl Morey for going down this path. It worked for the Golden State Warriors. They had the death lineup, thinking that the same thing is going to work in Houston. What people tend to forget, Steve Kerr only implemented that lineup situationally. It was not their starting five. During that 73-win season, the death lineup was used just 37 times, usually at the end of the first half or at the end of the game. It was not their starting lineup. And by the way, Kevin Durant is 6'10 with a 7'6 wingspan. So they still had some semblance of size on the floor. Now that Clint Capela's gone, the Rockets don't have a guy in their starting five that's over 6'7. PJ Tucker is listed as the center on the depth chart. He's 6'5. But KC, the Rockets have been winning with this small ball lineup for now. But in a 7-game series, the Rockets will be exploited. They can't fucking rebound. They just can't. They don't have the size. Last night's game against Phoenix is a prime example of what will happen to this team in the playoffs. The Suns had 23 turnovers. That's basically a turnover every second or third possession. You can't win games in the NBA by giving away the ball 23 times. But Phoenix overcame their turnovers by out-rebounding the Rockets 51-29. 10 offensive rebounds, 10 chances for second chance points. As a result, Houston lost by 36. Now you tell me how this Rockets team is supposed to beat the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets. You tell me the game plan. Who's guarding Anthony Davis? Who's guarding 6'9 Paul George? Who's guarding Nikola Jokic in Denver? This organization is in deep shit. You have an untradeable contract with Russell Westbrook. You've got two guards that need the ball in their hands to be effective. You have no presence in the paint. You can't defend. Rockets rank 23rd in points a game, 15th in defensive rating. You tell me the path to the NBA Finals for the Houston Rockets in this small ball lineup. Because I don't see it. If the season ended today, Houston would match up with the Jazz in the first round. And they'd lose. They don't have a guy on this roster that can match up with Rudy Gobert. There's going to be a lot of change in Houston this offseason. Mike D'Antoni is as good as gone. Daryl Morey could be gone. Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner, is not fucking around. This guy is ultra competitive. He wants to win. They've got no cap space to sign free agents. Trading Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook was a mistake. The future is bleak in Houston. It would not shock me in the least if James Harden eventually requested a trade. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. But at 30 years old, his prime years are slipping away. He's already accomplished everything there is in terms of individual accolades. He's carried this Rockets team as far as he can carry them. The Warriors were standing in their way the past few years. And now they've got two teams in Los Angeles blocking their path to the finals. All right, moving on. I think two of the biggest winners at the trade deadline were two teams that didn't make a deal at all. My New Orleans Pelicans and the Portland Trail Blazers' chances at winning that number 8 seed in the Western Conference went up dramatically on Thursday. And all they had to do was sit still, do nothing. Memphis traded away two contributors to Miami. Obviously, I'm not talking about Andre Iguodala, who has contributed nothing to Memphis this season. They dealt both Solomon Hill and Jay Crowder, which makes the Grizzlies' depth at small forward pretty much non-existent. Sure, they picked up Justice Winslow, but he's hurt. He's played one game since Christmas. He's always fucking hurt. He's missed damn near half the regular season his entire career. So Memphis is clearly thinking of the future with this deal and praying that Justice Winslow can get and stay healthy. And also unloading the distraction that Andre Iguodala was becoming. With 31 games to play, Memphis has the most difficult remaining schedule in the league. Now, I know Solomon Hill and Jay Crowder aren't big-name players, but they gave this team valuable minutes. Depth, or the lack thereof, is going to be a real issue down the stretch for the Grizzlies, especially with them facing the best teams in the league to close out the season. So this opens the door for both Portland and New Orleans. The Pelicans have the easiest remaining schedule, and this team's been on a tear the past couple of months. Zion Williamson is slowly getting into game shape. Emphasis on the word slowly. Even though he's not 100% in game shape, he's still putting up 18, 20 points a night, crashing the glass, grabbing rebounds, making highlight plays. He isn't there yet, but this team is starting to come together. I still don't feel like Alvin Gentry is the right coach, but I got to give him credit. This group of young players, this team is really buying into his system. I wish that the Pelicans would have parted ways, traded Drew Holiday, but I guess they're going to wait until this summer, which it could be a smart decision by David Griffin because the free agency market this summer is going to be weak and they could get a lot of value from Drew Holiday. Portland, on the other hand, is set for a strong close to the regular season, should get both of their bigs back, Zach Collins and Jusuf Nurkic. This is a different team with Nurkic in the lineup. They would have had a good chance to beat Golden State last season in the conference finals had they had Nurkic, since Kevin Durant was out for that series. Going to come down to Portland or New Orleans for the number 8 seed in the West, I feel like Memphis has kind of mailed in the season a little bit with their trade, clearly looking towards the future. And for the love of God, I hope D'Angelo Russell has finally found a home. I've never seen a player of this caliber get tossed around the NBA so frequently at the beginning of his career. Started with the Lakers, went to Brooklyn, rejuvenated the Nets, traded to Golden State, now finds himself in Minnesota. Apparently, the locker room in Golden State soured on D'Angelo Russell pretty quickly. But I didn't see how this was ever going to work in the first place. He was never going to fit with Klay and Steph Curry. And coming off the bench in the prime of his career isn't exactly an ideal situation. Now, does this move to Minnesota make the T-Wolves a playoff contender next season? Because they're not this year. No, it doesn't. But it does keep their lone superstar player, Karl-Anthony Towns, happy in the short term. He and D'Angelo Russell are best friends, and Towns will have a nice point guard to get him the ball. But this team is going to continue to get decimated defensively. Part of the problem that D'Angelo Russell had in Golden State was he didn't play defense. If you've watched the Warriors under Steve Kerr, then you know that mindset is unacceptable. Everyone knows them for their three-point shooting. But this team won championships on the back of great defense. The future is not bright in Minnesota. This team is not set up to contend. They don't have a pick in the 2021 draft. They've got their 2020 pick, but this draft class is weak as fuck. They don't have cap space to sign free agents. Not that any NBA free agent player wants to voluntarily spend time in Minnesota. However, the one bright spot in this deal for the T-Wolves, they got rid of Andrew Wiggins. When I talk about NFL quarterbacks like Dak Prescott or Jameis Winston, I call them fool's gold. That's what Andrew Wiggins is. He's a fucking bust. He'll have 5 to 6 great games where he shows flashes of brilliance. Then he'll return to being shitty. I do think he'll fit in better at Golden State. Hell, Harrison Barnes did well there. Very similar type of player to Andrew Wiggins. All right, let's switch gears for a second. The relaunch of the XFL officially begins today. You know what's funny? 19 years ago when Vince McMahon launched this league the first time, mainstream sports media could not get far enough away from it. Even though it was broadcast on NBC, guys like Bob Costas wanted nothing to do with it. Sports media rejected the league before they even kicked off their first game. But today, the sports media world is hyping the XFL like it's the next best thing to the NFL. ESPN's covering it. Cover story on ESPN.com Friday was about Landry Jones being the face of the XFL. Fox Sports is promoting the shit out of opening weekend this weekend. I was listening to Fox Sports Radio yesterday afternoon. Doug Gottlieb was talking about how amazing the XFL is going to be. I'm telling you right now, the XFL will cease to exist within 2 to 3 years. The only reason I'm giving it that long is because they've got plenty of financial backing. Vince McMahon's a billionaire and can afford to waste hundreds of millions of dollars restarting a failed football league. I don't know why people continue to try these spring football leagues. They never work. Just because I love football, it doesn't mean I want to watch bad football. Hell, I have a hard time watching a lot of college football games these days because the product on the field is unwatchable. Same thing with the XFL during its first iteration in 2001. Same thing with the AAF last year. When your biggest star is Landry Jones, you're already starting off on the wrong foot. The guy was working fucking construction before the XFL came calling. Listen to this list of other so-called star players in the XFL. Josh Johnson, Christine Michael, I think that's a player, not a cheerleader. Keenan Reynolds, Matt Elam, Sammy Coates, I remember him from Auburn. Will Sutton, Jordan Tamu, no relation to Shamu. Matt Jones, who I believe was the quarterback at Arkansas a few years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Lance Dunbar, Jeff Badette, Kenneth Farrow, Scooby Wright. I've never heard of 90% of these fucking guys. Spring football doesn't work. It never has. Likely never will. I say it all the time on this podcast. One of the biggest reasons the NFL is so popular is because it's scarce. The season is short. 16 games, September to December. Scarcity creates value. It makes the NFL regular season special. Vince McMahon and the XFL went about this all wrong, in my opinion. When you're starting a new league, you need stars. You need players that people know. Players that people want to tune in and watch on a Saturday or a Sunday. This league is completely lacking in star power. If it were me, first thing I would have done is get on the phone, call Colin Kaepernick, call Johnny Manziel, offer both of those guys $500,000 to play this season. Instead, Vince McMahon has completely ignored both of them because they don't fit the, quote, image of his league. He's completely out of touch. Vince McMahon has never succeeded at anything outside the world of professional wrestling or sports entertainment, as he likes to call it. And if you look at the ratings, he doesn't even succeed at wrestling anymore. The WWE struggles to draw flies to shit, and they're on fucking Fox every Friday night. They can't draw viewers to network television. If Vince McMahon wanted guys to fit his image of the XFL, then why not look at the college ranks? Go after guys like Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, who still has one more year left before he's draft eligible. Do anything but what Vince McMahon did, which is go after journeyman NFL quarterbacks that lasted 1-2 years in the league, and no-name ex-college football players who no one gives a shit about. The XFL's dead on arrival. The networks will abandon the league as soon as they see that no one is watching. The middle of the XFL regular season will be going on during March Madness. What the fuck you think people are going to be watching? The playoffs in the XFL will coincide with the beginning of the NBA playoffs. Like I said, dead on arrival. All right, that's all for today, guys. I'll be back Tuesday to recap the weekend. You can follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. Make sure to hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube. Leave me a 5-star rating on iTunes. Enjoy your weekend. I will see you guys on Tuesday.